This is Digital Story Podcast number 519, February 16th, 2016. Today's theme is Just Five Frames. I'm Derek Story. One of the interesting things that's emerged from the film project is the idea of shooting fewer pictures for any given subject. For a roll of 36 exposures, for example, I usually like to have 7 different topics. So I've been limiting myself to 5 frames at a time. I decided to move this concept over to digital too. And it's interesting the effect it's having on my photography. And that is the topic for today's show. Just 5 frames. So, when I get a roll of film back from the lab, and for those of you that maybe have just joined the podcast and don't know the backstory in this, back on December 1st, 2015, I started something called The Film Project. And the idea of The Film Project was to test this theory that a lot of people put forward, in that shooting film makes you a better digital photographer. Now, I have heard that time and time again. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure I buy it. So I decided, okay, you know what? I stumbled across it again while I was researching something, writing about something. I'm going to test it. I got a bunch of film in the refrigerator that I've had there forever. I'm going to shoot it up, and then I'm going to say, hey, am I a better digital photographer now because I've been shooting film? And I didn't want to be one of those guys that say, you know, I shoot film. Because, I wanted to test this theory. So doggone it, now that I'm into it and have been working with this project, and the project's coming along wonderfully, by the way, I am starting to learn a few things. Relearn a few things, or at least think about a few things that I hadn't been thinking about when I was shooting purely digital. And this is one of them, this just five frames thing. When you're shooting film, at least when I'm shooting film, I don't want to shoot 36 exposures of the same subject. It is, to me anyway, it's boring to get a roll of film back from the lab and just have, you know, it all be the same person or the same building, or, you know, how we get obsessed with things. It could be the same cup of coffee, right? That we just had to shoot another frame, and then we had to shoot another frame at a slightly different angle with a third of an f-stop more exposure, and on and on and on. And we do that in digital. I do that in digital because there's really no price to pay for doing it, right? Yes, when you load your images into Lightroom or Photos or Capture One, whatever you're using, yes, you do have to go through them and rate them and figure out which one of those 50 frames of a cup of coffee is the best one. But even that is pretty easy these days because, you know, you just have, you know, a finger on the arrow key and you have the pictures up on the screen just going boom, 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 boom. And I don't know, does this happen to you? Let's say I have that scenario where I have 50 frames of a cup of coffee. Am I really super analytical about which one I mark 3 stars compared to all the other ones that I mark 2 stars? I don't think so. I think what I usually do is just at some point I go, eh, that one looks good. I'm giving it 3 stars. And then I want to move on to the next set of images because I'm bored and looking at 50 frames of a cup of coffee. And I probably don't even pick the absolute best frame of those 50 frames to mark as 3 stars. I think at some point I just say, screw it, I'm picking that one. It looks good. And in all honesty, of those 50 frames, I could probably pick 45 of them as the best one, and, you know, I wouldn't be that far off. You know, and this is something that I sort of knew in the back of my mind, right? I mean, you kind of feel it when you're going along. You're going, am I really picking the best shot, or am I just, you know, being a little lazy right now? Then I never really answer that question. I just go on to the next series of shots. You can't do that with film. Or you can, but if you do, then, you know, you just end up with binders and binders of, you know, pictures of coffee mugs. And, you know, you think it's boring to review them on a computer screen. It's really boring to review them as negatives on a light table, believe me. So the idea of not shooting 50 frames of a subject, an inanimate object especially, is a pretty good one. And I really don't know, because I shot film forever, right? I really don't know how I got so far off track on this. I don't know how I got, do I have a problem with my index finger that presses the shutter, you know, where I don't lift it up when I should? Is it a physical ailment? I don't know. I think it's laziness myself. I think because I could, if you know, I have a 32 gigabyte card or a 64 gigabyte card in there, it doesn't really make any difference. So one of the things that sort of dawned on me as I started limiting myself with the film shots is that, wow, you know, this is something I could apply to my digital work. Now, a typical shot for the film project is usually something that I anticipate, I think about, and then I photograph it. There are spur-of-the-moment things, because I do carry either the Contax G1 with me or the T2. So I can do spur-of-the-moment stuff, but a lot of times, like I have a shoot tomorrow morning when this podcast airs, I will already have done my work with you. So I'll be out taking pictures. So I have this shoot tomorrow, and I've put a lot of thought into the part where I'm going to shoot film. The bulk of it's going to be in digital because I'm testing something new that I'm going to talk about later in the show. But I'm going to do my 5 frames of film. And believe me, I have been thinking a lot more about those 5 frames of film than I have been the 150 frames of digital that I'll probably shoot also. And I think that is what's happening here, is that I'm thinking more about the shot. I'm more careful when I take the shot, and then when I get that roll of film back, my expectations are pretty high that I'm going to see, you know, not one, not two, but 5, 6, or 7 different subjects with at least one good shot in each of those series. That is my expectation, because quite honestly, it's annoying to go to all the trouble to shoot film and the expense, and then to get it back and, you know, have a bunch of terrible shots. It's extremely annoying. And it's even more annoying when it's a bunch of lazy shots. So that's not happening. You know, that's, I'm really putting thought into that. And I'm going, you know what? This is a lesson I can bring over to the digital world. Now, this won't work for everything. We know that, right? I mean, if you're going to go out and shoot a basketball game, or soccer game, or something like that, you got to shoot as many frames as you need to shoot. And this is where digital is a godsend, right? Because you can shoot all those frames, and you don't have to reload after 36, and you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, what a blessing digital photography is. My gosh, it is. And there are a lot of things, portrait shoots and so forth, where I like shooting a lot of frames, and I don't mind going through them because every frame is a little different. You know, the person does, you know, like sometimes just the slightest movement during a portrait shoot changes the photo and makes it a lot better. Do not get me wrong about this. You would have to pry my OMD EM5 Mark II from my hand. I would never go back to all film. And I try to stay away from saying never, but that's a never I feel pretty comfortable with. But I really do like bringing some analog back into the picture. I am liking that a lot because I'm learning these little things. And there are a lot of things that I shoot digitally that I could be more disciplined during the shoot. I really could. Little shots of products, building shots, landscape shots. Even certain people shots, I could be more disciplined. I could be more careful during the shoot. I could think about it a bit more. I could really make sure that I'm doing the right exposure and the right white balance at the time of capture. I could really just work through this whole thing a bit more than I am. And then I wouldn't need to shoot more frames. I could do it in 5 frames. So I'm bringing this up today because I think it's kind of a neat exercise. You know, we're always looking for ways to shake up our photography because, oh my gosh, do we fall into ruts so easily. There's just so many ways that we just keep doing the same thing over and over again. And I thought, okay, here is a way, and I have to say, a fairly painless way, to really kind of change our thinking every now and then with our digital cameras. And it could be, let's say, your Sunday shoot. It could be, you know, what you want to do if you only have like an hour on Saturday and go, you know what, I have an hour on Saturday, finish my chores, I don't have to work, I have an hour, I want to go take some shots. You know, I want to get something in the camera. So what if for that exercise you say, I'm going to do the 5 frames thing. So I'm going to actually think about the shot before I go out. I'm going to really be careful about how I expose it. I'm going to limit myself to 5 frames per subject. And then in that hour, maybe I'll come away with 3 or 4 different compositions, each 5 frames or less, that I really like. Instead of standing there in front of the same old vacated building and shooting 100 frames. And you go, well, Derek, you know, you need to walk around your subject. You need to explore it from different angles. Yeah, you do. Yes, you do. I agree. You don't need to take a picture, though. Right? You don't need to take... I do teaching. So I do one-on-one teaching, which I really enjoy. And so we did a shoot in Railroad Square for the last lesson I did with one of my students. And we did not shoot for the first 20 minutes. We walked around, we looked at things, we talked about stuff. We got our mental gears going for sure. And then we pulled out the camera and then we started shooting. That kind of thing. You know, and so yes, you can walk around a subject and explore it, but you don't have to shoot 100 frames at every, you know, every 20 degrees while you're doing that. You can walk around, explore it, figure out the 2 or 3 angles that you like, and then shoot a frame or two there. So something to think about. I mean, you know, it could be just one of those things where you go, ah, Derek. You know, generally speaking, you're pretty spot on this week. I don't know. But I don't think so. I think I'm onto something here. And so give it a try. Just 5 frames. Not all the time. You know, and if you want to do it with film, hey, that's not a bad way to go. I think it's easier with film, but also you can transfer it. You can also do this technique with digital also. See what you think. Give it a try. And if you have a comment about it, even if you haven't tried it yet, just thinking about it, go ahead and post it on our Facebook page with the show notes for this week, and you know, maybe we can have a little chat about it. I'm going to do it tomorrow. Okay. All right. On to the next story. In the news, Ricoh celebrates 80th anniversary with a limited edition silver GR2. This is covered by DP Review. If the stealth black GR2 isn't quite showy enough for you, then you may be interested in Ricoh's new Silver Edition camera, which it created to celebrate its 80th anniversary. In addition to its new color, Ricoh has also diamond engraved the lens specs onto its front ring, added a custom on-off termination screen, and a bundled leather carrying case. Only 3,200 of the Silver Edition GR2 cameras will be sold worldwide. The compact GR2 features a 16-megapixel APS-C CMOS sensor, 28mm equivalent f2.8 lens, 1080 30p video, Wi-Fi, NFC. It's a really nice camera. The Silver Edition will be priced at $699. I saw a picture of it. I like it. So, you know, the GR2 is a cool camera. It's one of those, if you like it, you love it sort of cameras. Now, I tested the GR1, which is very similar to the 2. It didn't have Wi-Fi, for an article for Macworld magazine back when I was writing for them. And I was really skeptical about walking around with a camera that had a fixed 28 millimeter lens. Like, it's just too wide for me for everything. You know, sometimes I like to zoom in, sometimes I like to zoom out. And after shooting with it for a week, I was going, you know what? This is not a problem at all. I really like shooting with it. And I would zoom in and zoom out. I just do it with my feet when I could, of course. Sometimes you can't. And then I had to send it back because, you know, it was a review model because I was doing a thing. And I've thought about that camera many times since, thinking, boy, that'd be kind of a neat camera to have. Because it's very light, it fits in your pocket, just really outstanding lens, great pictures, the whole deal. So this silver edition, celebrating 80th anniversary, that's is another one of those, oh gosh, this is way too tempting cameras sort of thing. But I'll tell you what I learned walking around with that and really being limited to 28 millimeters, if that probably isn't even the right way to say it. It gave me the confidence then when I bought my Contax G1 film camera, the first lens I got for it is the 28 millimeter, and it's the one that I leave on there almost all the time, 28 millimeter f2.8. And you know what? I do have the 90 also for that camera, but 8 out of 10 times I'm shooting with that 28 millimeter, and I really sort of got comfortable with that lens. So these are interesting cameras, you know, in a lot of ways, sort of piggybacks what we're talking about in the first story, just ways you can shake up your photography a little bit, you know, where you're actually challenging yourself to do something a little bit different. So I'm not saying you have to go out and buy a GR2 to do that. You can actually just put a 28 millimeter lens on your existing camera and go that route. But that is one of the things that I always think about whenever the GR comes up. And I really like what they've done with this limited edition silver body. It looks really good. I have a night photography tip for you. And I've been looking at a lot of folks' night photography lately. You know, you sometimes get on these jags where you're looking at a certain kind of shot a lot. And it makes me think of one of my favorite tips, which is take it off auto white balance when you're shooting urban scenes at night and move it to tungsten. Because what happens with the auto white balance is that a lot of those city lights are really these kind of a yucky yellow-green color. And, you know, a lot of times we'll let that go because it's a night shot and it's so cool already. I mean, you know, we become... you know, mesmerized by the other parts of the image and sort of let that color go. But I discovered that if I switch to the tungsten white balance preset and shoot those same shots, it's even better. And one of the things I noticed is that not only do the lights become more bluish, they become all sorts of different variations of blue. And it's a fascinating, fascinating rendition. And I find it far more interesting as a total photograph than, you know, if it's this yellow-green color. And you can do this in post also, right? You can do this in post where just take an existing night shot, urban night shot that you have and that you really like, and play with the white balance. Move it over to the tungsten preset or somewhere around that neighborhood and see what you think. Create two versions of the shot, show it to people, see which one they respond to. I'll tell you, it's really neat. The reason why I like to do it at capture is because when I look at that on the screen, when I see all those really beautiful blues on the screen, I get inspired. And then, you know, then I work even harder to get a good shot. So even though you can do it in post, at capture, I think it's really inspiring. And it's a tip that I was just thinking about as I was looking at all those night shots. And give it a try. See what you think. I really like it. Member quotes of the week. Intelligent comments culled from the Digital Story Facebook page. So this week we're going to talk about last week's podcast, going from Lightroom or Aperture to Capture One Pro, and we had some terrific comments. Now, before I get to the specific comments, and they're good, I just want to make a general statement. So when I talk about transitioning from Lightroom to Capture One Pro, I'm not saying that I think you should do that. I'm saying that if you are thinking about doing that, I can help you, and that I think it's a good idea. But I'm not recommending that anyone give up Lightroom and move to Capture One Pro. If you're happy with Lightroom, then, you know, stay, for Pete's sakes, because moving is, you know, a pain in the butt. So I'm not advocating that at all. And I think when I start talking about stuff like this, whenever I talk about change, any sort of change, a certain part of our audience, you know, they get a little unnerved because they think this is, you know, they think I'm advocating this, that you should do this. And all I ever do, whether we're talking about cameras or software or technique or whatever, five frames, whatever, I'm just putting it out there as food for thought. And if it's something that you're interested in, then I probably have done a lot of legwork and I can save you time if you do want to make that change. If you love Lightroom, then just keep loving Lightroom. Photographers who use Lightroom are full-fledged citizens, full-fledged members of our virtual camera club and our photography community, because, you know, Lightroom is a terrific application. All right. So I just wanted to get that out there, because some of the comments I'm not going to read, I think, you know, they're going, I don't want to switch. And I'm just saying, you don't have to. Okay. I don't want you to either. All right, so anyway, here we go. So on to the comments about Capture One Pro and Lightroom and Aperture and all that. Michael wrote, the podcast is, once again, a model of clarity on a complex topic. Thanks, Derek. It's hard to imagine how you could have done more to facilitate the transition for Aperture users. Do you have any thoughts on the stability or longevity of Capture One or its owner, Phase One? While making predictions is dangerous, especially about the future, as Oscar Wilde warned us, it seems worth considering this before making the significant investment of time and energy that this transition will require. Keep up the great work. You know, Michael, that is a terrific question. Because, yes, you know, how many times have we been burned, especially with these darn cloud storage sites? I tell you, I'm not even going to advocate one anymore because I've been burned so many times on that, you know, and you get it all set up and you move over there and they go, oh, we don't have enough funding. Oh man, you should have thought about that long time ago. And then of course, you know, we all know about Aperture and there are other things in our history too. So it's a fair question. Now, here's my answer. I don't know the future, but I do know this. With Capture One, we're at version 9. So that Aperture never made it past 3, okay? So that'll tell you something right there in terms of commitment to the application. And Michael mentioned Phase One. Phase One likes the software, Capture One Pro, because it started out, you know, they needed software to go with their backs, their digital backs. And they wanted, their vision was to create a total workflow. So this software is integrated into their whole business. Now, it has grown to the point where you don't need to use a Phase One back to love Capture One Pro. But, you know, that was the original thinking. And believe me, all the Phase One stuff is fully supported. And this software works great with it if you want to go that route. So, you know, I think there's another thing. And then they really are smart about going about their business. I like the way their business, you know, they have that nice balance between hardware and software. So I'm feeling pretty good about it. It's the old thing is, if you're recommending schools, what school do your kids go to? That kind of thing. So I'm saying that, you know, my kids right now are going to Capture One Pro. All right. So great question, and thank you for the kind words too, Michael. Now, Mac added, another great show. I switched to Capture One in December. Since I usually run annual catalogs in Lightroom, it was easy. Just set up a new catalog in Capture One and done. The info you provided about importing old libraries to C1 is invaluable. And he's referring to the free ebook that you can download at rockynook.com. Since I started with C1, it's a learning adventure. It works a little different than Lightroom, which I've had since V1. So I stumbled through it. I can't wait for your lynda.com course on it. That is so true. And I think if you're moving from Lightroom to Capture One Pro, it is a little bit different than moving from Aperture to Capture One Pro. Aperture and Capture One Pro seem to have more of the same aesthetic. Lightroom, because Lightroom is modal, you know, you go from the library module, the develop module, the print module, that kind of thing. And the way that it organizes its files is much different than sort of the Capture One approach, where you just have one screen with all these different tabs and you just move around more freely. So yeah, Mac, I agree with you. It's a bit more difficult. I think when the lynda.com title comes out, which I've been mentioning is in editing now, I believe it goes into testing. I think it's this week it goes into testing, which means when it goes into testing, unless I really screwed up, it should be publishing a week or two after that. So we're close. We're very close. Just hang in there just a little bit longer. Now, I had to add a tweet to this. I usually don't, but I love this. There was this tweet from one of our followers, E74Photo, and he said, when is your Capture One course coming out, which I just talked about, assuming the installer doesn't delete the root folders? Oh, God. So I don't know if you guys know about this story, but there's this whole thing with the latest update, CC update, Creative Cloud, delves into the root folder system of the Mac. And if you use Backblaze, didn't really work out well. And, you know, a lot of people had auto updates. So it went in there and it deleted a root folder and, messy, very messy. So, yeah. Capture One Pro, I'm pretty sure, won't do that. Okay. So anyway, so thanks for your thoughts, and keep posting your thoughts on our Facebook page. I love our community. I love hearing what you have to say. I read them all. I respond as much as I can, and I like sharing them on the show here. Updates and such. Well, the first update is a fun one. I am testing the Olympus 300mm f4 Pro lens this week. I have it for 1 week only. And, you know, they rarely put this kind of time constraint on it, but they don't have that many review lenses, and the demand is so high that, you know, they're really holding our feet to the fire on this. And I'm going to talk about it in more detail next week, but this is a 300mm f4, which means when you put on a Micro Four Thirds body, feels like a 600mm f4. Let me say that again, 600mm f4, that you can shoot without a monopod or a tripod because it has two image stabilization systems. It has an optical system, and it has, you know, obviously the sensor-based system that's on our camera, and they work together. And to give you an idea, I shot a couple's portrait with it on Saturday, handheld 1/60th of a second. 1/60th at that magnification. I was down, you know, like I was down a whole house away when I shot it because I wanted to really blot out the background. And the shots are sharp. They were sharp on the LCD, and I was going, I'm not going to fall for this. But they were sharp on the computer too. So it's really something else. So I'll talk more about it next week, but I just wanted to give you a heads up that, you know, that's in the works. Point Reyes Photography Workshop, we have two rooms open. And if you want to join us at the Strauss Ranch House in Point Reyes, this is going to be one of those workshops. It's going to be so cool where we're all kind of staying together. Everyone will have their own room, but I mean, we're all kind of staying together. And, you know, if you really like immersion and you really like getting away from it all, and then we're going to go to all these really wonderful and beautiful locations there. This is a workshop for you. If you want to get away from it all and just focus on your photography, this is a workshop to consider. So we have two seats open. All you have to do is go to the workshops page on the Digital Story. You'll see a link at the top. Do the send me info for this workshop, and I'll get you a registration form right away. Two seats left. And then, as I've been mentioning, we added a Nimble Photographer workshop on Thursday, June 23rd for the Out of Chicago Conference in Chicago. So this is going to be a fun event, the whole thing, including the workshop. Wanted to make you aware of that. Come if you're in that area and you can't get up the West Coast to come to Point Reyes and San Francisco and Eastern Sierra and all that, meet me in Chicago and let's have some fun in June there. I'm really looking forward to hanging out with you guys. I want to mention Gemini, the duplicate finder by Mac Paw. This will help you thin out those duplicates that you have on your computer. If you've got 27 versions of the same shot, probably don't need all of those. Gemini will help you whittle those down. And it's available at macpaw.com/Gemini. I want to thank Red River Paper for being the most amazing sponsor of a show that you could ask for. Sticking with us through thick and thin, rain and sleet and snow, and making it possible for me to go to Chicago and speak there. And they make fantastic paper. They sell at a reasonable cost. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. And I also want to thank the good folks over at Image Framer. And they have a landing page for us. And I'll tell you, if you really want to snazz up your photos, whether they be prints that you put on Red River paper, or they be digital images, or they be stuff that you're thinking about putting on the wall, take that shot, put it in Image Framer, play with borders, mats, frames, change the wall color, you can do all sorts of stuff, and really finish off that shot and make it a piece of art. Image Framer, just go over there, see them, take a look at what they've done. Great supporters of the Digital Story, and I'm so pleased to have them as part of our family. All right, that is going to do it for me. I was on the road for the last 3 days, and there was a lot of traffic in California, I tell you. Getting around was not easy. I went from north to south, back to north again. It was worth it. I'm really glad I did it. But man, oh man, does it wear you out. So I'm going to edit this thing up, post it tonight for you guys, get a little bit of rest, and then do that shoot tomorrow and get some real exercise tomorrow too. So I'm working on some great stories. I already kind of gave you a preview of one of them for next week. So come back and join me. Love having you as part of our audience. Have a great week. Bye-bye now.